Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Kathleen O, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater in California. Today is Monday, September 17th, 2018, and this is the 10 a.m. meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book and we are at page 114, the third paragraph, but sometimes you must start life anew, reading through seven paragraphs, ending with which led to the discovery of God. We will be commenting on all seven paragraphs. Today's readers are Jane S. for the 12 steps, Wendy B. for the 12 traditions, and our readers of the text are Kathy Jo P., Marilyn T., and Leslie W. The share ID for yesterday's special edition, Sunday, September 16th, 2018, is 11,920, 11920. And for this morning, 7 a.m. Eastern Time, is 11,922, 11922. Our newcomer greeter for today is Melanie C. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Jane S. to read the 12 steps. Jane, we don't hear you. Can you press star 1 to unmute?
Yes, good morning. This is Jane S. I'm a compulsive overeater in New Hampshire. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Awesome. Okay, here we are. The steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me share and be service. I pass.
Thank you, Jane S. And Wendy B., will you please read the 12 traditions?
Yes, thank you. This is Wendy B., recovered in Arizona. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. Our OA group but never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has but no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Pass.
Thank you, Wendy B. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book in the chapter Two Wives on page 114. Starting with the third paragraph, but sometime you must start life anew, and we'll be reading through seven paragraphs, ending with, which led to the discovery of God. We'll be commenting on all seven paragraphs. And I will now ask Kathy Jo P. to begin reading.
Good morning. This is Kathy Jo P., a recovered compulsive overeater in Minneapolis, Minnesota. But sometimes you must start life anew. We know women who have done it. If such women adopt a spiritual way of life, their road will be smoother. If your husband is a drinker, you probably worry over what other people are thinking, and you hate to meet your friends. You draw more and more into yourself, and you think everyone is talking about conditions at your home. You avoid the subject of drinking, even with your own parents. You do not know what to tell the children. When your husband is bad, you become a trembling recluse, wishing the telephone had never been invented. We find that most of this embarrassment is unnecessary. While you need not discuss your husband at length, you can quietly let your friends know the nature of his illness. But you must be on guard not to embarrass or harm your husband. When you have carefully explained to such people that he is a sick person, you will have created a new atmosphere. Barriers which have sprung up between you and your friends will disappear with the growth of sympathetic understanding. You will no longer be self-conscious or feel that you must apologize as though your husband were a weak character. He may be anything but that. Your new courage, good nature, and lack of self-consciousness will do wonders for you socially. The same principle applies in dealing with the children. Unless they actually need protection from their father, it is best not to take sides in any argument he has with them while drinking. Use your energies to promote a better understanding all around. Then that terrible tension which grips the home of every problem drinker will be lessened. Frequently, you have felt obliged to tell your husband's employer and his friends that he was sick, when as a matter of fact, he was tight. Avoid answering these inquiries as much as you can. Whenever possible, let your husband explain. Your desire to protect him should not cause you to lie to people when they have the right to know where he is and what he is doing. Discuss this with him when he is sober and in good spirits. Ask him what you should do if he places you in such a position again. But be careful not to be resentful about the last time he did so. There is another paralyzing fear. You may be afraid your husband will lose his position. You are thinking of the disgrace and hard times which will befall you and the children. This experience may come to you, or you may have already had it several times. Should it happen again, regard it in a different light. Maybe it will prove a blessing. It may convince your husband he wants to stop drinking forever. And now you know that he can stop if he will. Time after time, this apparent calamity has been a boon to us, for it opened up a path which led to the discovery of God. Okay, well, I come from a family of addiction. And when I came to OA in the 80s, I ended up spending a lot of time looking at my childhood pain, my childhood hurts, all the things that had been wrong to me as a child. And it was helpful in meeting other people that understood how hard that was. But it kept me in a place of pain and resentment and fear. And I'm not saying that it's not good to look at that at all, but I'm one of those people that swam and swam and swam in the woe is me and how hard it was for me. And I almost am going to say there's a saying, poor me, poor me, pour me another drink. Well, it got me in the poor me, poor me, pour me some more food. And I came back to these rooms 6 years ago, and my husband went into treatment at the very same time. And again, I wanted to focus on him as the addict rather than me. Yet I was the one that had the most broken relationships. I shared this last week, but our lawyer slash accountant basically banned me from her office because of how I behaved. I mistreated waitresses. I had a lot of amends when I came back to OA that were focused on how I treated my husband in front of others. And one word that was used at one time was contempt. And I had to look it up in the dictionary because I had no idea what it even meant. But I mistreated my husband over and over again. And yes, we were dual addicts, but I'm going to say somehow or another, he got the memo to treat people much more kind than I did. And so I'm going to tell you, as I have focused on my side of the street, and I literally can tell you I have been doing that, my relationship with my husband has changed tremendously. And I came back kind of focusing on trying to find him a meeting and trying to find him a workshop, whatever, so he could change. But thank God, I got too busy in my own work that I didn't have time to monitor him. And I'm going to tell you, I continue to be blessed by the ways that I am working on my side of the street. And sometimes I even have the luxury that he beats me to an amend. As in, when we have a conflict and I'm ready to do my amend, all of a sudden we're in the kitchen and his arms are around me. And he says, I'm sorry, honey. And he beats me to it. And that is a blessing that comes from working this program. And I thank God that I am living today in the quote, by only how wrong I can I be free. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy Jo P. Okay, we are reading page 114, the third paragraph, but sometimes you must start life anew, reading through seven paragraphs, ending with which led to the discovery of God. And who would like to share on those seven paragraphs?
Wendy M. Rebecca P.
Donna V.
Marilyn T.
Anyone else? Take a few more. Okay, I have Wendy M., Rebecca T., Donna B., and Marilyn T. Did I miss anybody? Okay, Wendy M., go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Wendy M., recovered in Boulder, Colorado. Thank you, moderator, for your service and everybody on the line. And I am all fired up. I got a bunch of vitamin OA over the weekend in Estes Park for an OA retreat. It's fabulous. Thank you, God. So, again, this chapter is telling me how to treat other human beings. And it's showing me get out of self, right? This book is the death of self. So, it says many, many things about what to do. One is to stay in my own swim lane, right? It says about the husband, I'm looking for the quote, here it is. Whenever possible, let your husband explain. Like, that in itself could be a book for me. Like, don't speak for other people. Don't speak about other people. Everyone can take care of themselves. That's what I'm getting here. And it also says, discuss things, like, at a better time. And I'm a queen of, like, if I'm having a feeling, let's go. Let's go right now, right in front of people at a party. Let's go. Because my impatience, my need to get satisfied in terms of I have a bad feeling and I want to have a good one, I will do that. And then it basically talks about embarrassing, right? Like, I did that in my marriage. I would talk loud at a party. I would dress loud. I would dance loud. And I never took into consideration what that would be like. What's it like for the other person? What's it like for my ex-husband to be with me, my son to be with me, anybody, a friend, the parent? What's it like for them, you know? And it also says something that I really loved, which is this piece about wounds that I heard it this weekend too. At the very end, it says, which will lead to the discovery of God, you know, and it's my wounds that lead me to God, right? It's my pain that leads me to God. It's my desperation. It's my defects that lead me to God. That's how I get there. You know, when I'm in a defect, God is knocking on my door saying, hello, I'm right here. All you need to do is align yourself with me, plug into me. And it's all you have to do is pause and plug in, you know, and God makes that so. It's my brokenness that leads me to God. So thank God for my brokenness, because I get to be free when I go to God. So, and then the other piece too, like, people are talking about me. What do they think of me? You know what? I'm learning that people are pretty much just thinking about themselves. They're actually not thinking about Wendy. Like, what do I look like? What do you think of me? Am I funny? Am I doing the deed here? And they're actually not thinking about me. That's the thing. And I've also heard just, you know, I feel a lot of this is about getting out of self. Like, again, like the death of self. Self is our dilemma, right? Lack of power and self, you know, and this is just showing me exactly what to do every time I want to go to self, you know, with another human being. And I love just the relationship ideal. How can I show up? How can I be the best me in this relationship, regardless of what it is, husband, wife, ex-husband, 13-year-old son, doesn't matter. How can I be the best me? And how can I take my fingerprints off of them and just take responsibility for my swim lane? And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Wendy. And Rebecca T., you're up, followed by Donna B.
Hi, it's Rebecca T. from Central California.
grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Thank you so much for sharing. Thank you so much for this chapter. I have so much to learn and so many wonderful ways to grow. And yeah, thanks for the reminder. I think this the struggle and kind of roadblock I have with my husband and our relationship was a sign that I just needed to get closer to my higher power, that that I wasn't done learning, that it's not about me. Well, it is about me, but I mean, it's not about my feelings and how things aren't working and how he should be different. And the entire chapter is talking to me as the wife. And I'm going to go back and read this. I don't know, like maybe 10 times today, because it gave me clear direction. And I'm seeing that. I see where my part is, that, I enabled him. He was not an alcoholic, but in his own, personal struggles, he was not present in the relationship. And I used to make excuses for that. And I used to feel ashamed. And in my head, I would put him down. And I would, I pretty much characterized him as being a certain way, a weak man. And I'm pretty sure that reflected in how I would treat him or how I would show love towards him, as our marriage continued. And so for today, thank God, I'm going to use the steps. I'm going to talk to my higher power. I'm going to pray for the willingness. I'm going to show love. I'm going to clean all of my side of the street and get off of his side and trust that his higher power will take care of his side. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rebecca T. And Donna B., followed by Marilyn T.
Good morning. This is Donna B. from Denver, Colorado.
Sorry, D as in dog, Donna?
B as in boy.
Oh, okay. I did have it right. Sorry. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
No problem. Thank you. What I hear in these paragraphs over and over again is to practice rigorous honesty. That really struck me as an overarching theme in these paragraphs. And I also heard a promise that comes from practicing rigorous honesty, which for me is an enormous promise that fills me with great hope. And that promise is that you will no longer be self-conscious. That would be such an amazing miracle in my life to have that self-conscious lifted. I too grew up in a dysfunctional home with people who were spiritually sick at the core of their illness. And what I learned in that childhood was to keep what was happening in the home a secret. It was not permissible for anybody to know what was going on inside the home. And I carried that on to believe that it was not permissible to let anyone know what was going on with me. And as a result of that, I developed this sort of magic trick, which is that when I might be feeling uncomfortable, I actually feel nothing. And my mind immediately diverts to an obsession with my body image. How does my body look? What do people think about my body? It has gone so far, the obsession with my body image, that when I would, in normal circumstances, be extremely uncomfortable, rather than having feelings, I actually I have a sensation of my body expanding, and I become hyper-focused on my body. Today, I have the opportunity to be honest about the facts of my life, and slowly God is giving me the opportunity to have feelings. And when I do have body image flares, rather than it escalating and escalating into hyper self-consciousness, I can say, oh yeah, when I focus on my body and I'm obsessing about how it looks and how it feels and it expanding before my very eyes, I might be having a feeling that I might have the opportunity to address. And so that gives me an opportunity to reach out to a fellow, to reach out to my higher power, and to practice honesty. So in these paragraphs, it talks about letting down the barriers, revealing the secrets of what's happening inside your home. For me, my body is a metaphorical home. And when I'm in that dark place of obsessing about my body, it's helpful for me to pause and remember that I can reach out and be honest. And through that honesty, I'm relieved of the obsession, and I also have the opportunity to make connections. Thank you. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Donna B. And Marilyn T., you're up.
Thank you, Kathleen O., for being of service. This is Marilyn T. in Northern California. And the one that really just got me right off in this reading is that where we started on page 114, the third paragraph, but sometimes you must start life anew. We know women who have done it. If such women adopt a spiritual way of life, their road will be smoother. So how I put that for me, even though it's two wives, and I am not married now, I am divorced, is that I can start over. I can adopt a spiritual way of life, and it will be smoother. In working, the last time I worked these 12 steps out of the big book, my life was changed forever for the better. I can now look at my life through a spiritual plane and know how to be the person that my higher power wants me to be. And that means to treat everyone with dignity and respect. Not to take out frustrations or my insecurities on other people. And I can relate to the wives in this because since I was married once, the one thing that I had problems with was, my ex-husband was into drugs and other women, but I can remember telling so many secrets, so many lies, keeping so many secrets, telling so many lies, not telling his family, my family. I mean, I can relate to all this. It was leading a double life and living a life of secrecy, and it was no way to go. And it just, created an unbelievably stressed life and family. And that is not when my addictions with food started. That's definitely not. That started from the cradle. But it didn't help it any, the isolation and everything else. But telling my story about it didn't help either because, yes, it was traumatic, but it just, you don't need to carry on the tale of it. I mean, it's been done and over with for years, decades, and it is my past. It is a part of who I am, but it is also how I recovered was turning to my higher power for strength and relief and knowing that I am not defined by one bad relationship. I'm not defined by, that does not give me an excuse to ruin my life and my child's life. And thankfully, recovery in 12 steps is what saved me and my son, him from NA and me from OA. And I am so grateful for this fellowship. That brings me to tears when I think that the 12-step program out of the big book can save so many lives in so many different anonymous programs. And thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Marilyn T. That was perfect timing. Okay, we are on page 114, the third paragraph, but sometimes you must start life anew, reading through seven paragraphs, ending with which led to the discovery of God. Comment on all seven paragraphs, and who would like to share on those seven paragraphs?
Eileen F.
Oh.
Sorry, I heard two people. Who was that?
My name is Nahama. And the other person, okay. I think, was... Nahama T, as in...
Okay, Nahama T. And who else?
Eileen F.
Eileen F.
Deborah G.
Deborah D.
Mary Jane Z.
Mary Jane Z.
Jordan L.
Jordan L. Good time to share if you haven't before.
Debbie B.
Is that Sandy B?
Debbie B.
Oh, sorry, Debbie B. Okay. Okay, so I have, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, Nathama T, Eileen S, Deborah D, Mary Jane Z, Jordan L, and Debbie B. So, Nahama T, go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much for the meeting. I am, well, I like to say I'm recovering because the process is a slow peeling of the onion in this program for me. This is, I think it's the first time I've ever shared on a Vision for You. I have listened here and there, but I have been in different 12-step programs for many, many years. And so I feel a little bit nervous sharing here. Everybody sounds so recovered, and I don't feel that way a lot of the time. And I hope I won't break any rules, but because I'm not familiar with all of them. But anyway, this is so relevant to me, these paragraphs. My husband is actually also in recovery, and the other day, what for me was like a scary fight. And it's so, like, all my recovery seems to go out the window when my little girl is triggered, and I get very scared of anger, and I feel very criticized and very sensitive to criticism and not feeling loved and neglected and all that, all my character defects seem to come glaring out, especially when it comes, you know, to him, being critical, having grown up in an alcoholic home. And I have a very sensitive nervous system and predisposition to irritability and sensitivity, but sensitive nervous system. And a while ago, we were introduced to this chapter, and there are even meetings for husbands and wives about this chapter, about, you know, the husbands and wives. And so we've learned a lot of tools there, you know, about pausing and moratoriums and how important is it. And, you know, they go through a whole list of tools that, you know, that they teach on these meetings, you know, for couples in recovery and whatever. But, you know, but the main thing for me is that, you know, my ego, you know, it's all about my ego. And it's really hard for me to say, okay, like I was speaking to a friend this morning, and I said, well, when your husband's in that really angry place, how about we both try saying the fourth step prayer, that this is a sick man, just like me, this is a sick man. How, you know, God saved me from being angry. How can I be helpful to him? And that's really hard for me to do, to pause when agitated, when I feel threatened or scared. But I, you know, have to work on that. So anyway, thank you so much for listening. I do ask God to heal me, all the places in me that need healing. Thanks for all of your service, and I appreciate it. And I'll pass.
Thank you, Nahama. And Eileen S., you're up next, followed by Deborah D.
Good morning. This is Eileen S. in Portland, Oregon.
Thank you, Kathleen, for your service and for everybody on the line. I haven't shared for a little while, and I notice a difference in me when I don't share, because I was taught a long time ago to share and to feel a part of. So when I don't share, I don't feel quite as much a part of. So grateful to be sharing this morning. You know, as we're reading this, I notice myself going back and forth with which wife or husband, which I identify with. Sometimes I identify with what they're saying to the wife, and sometimes I identify with what they're talking about with the husband. So I'm kind of all of this. I'm all of this. I'm a human, and I take in, I have all these, a lot of these characteristics. So I'm sort of looking at it from that point of view. And the very beginning of what we read this morning, sometimes you must start life anew. And I relate to that in that, you know, doing this program, being entirely abstinent, working the steps the way I'm working them with visions has caused me and inspired me to start life anew. And if I adopt a spiritual way of life, my road will be smoother. And that has been the case. And when I don't go there, because I don't all the time, I go back into my will, my road isn't as smooth. And it says you draw more and more into yourself. And that's me when I'm not in recovery and I'm not participating. That's me. I draw more and more into myself. I get into my selfishness, my self-consciousness, all that stuff. So I'm just looking at little spots here that spoke to me. Your new courage, good nature, and lack of self-consciousness will do wonders for you socially. And I just want to say mentally, physically, everything. And that's what this program gives me. So, and then just the last part that we read, I just love where it says, you know, there could be another paralyzing fear. You might, your husband might lose his position. We could say, I might lose my position. There may be hard times. And then it says, should it happen, regard it in a different light. That's what working the program does for me. It helps me to see things in a different light, because if I'm working a spiritual program, I can see that there's a hand of God in it. Maybe it will prove a blessing. And before I came into program, I couldn't imagine something crappy being a blessing. But it can be. And it says this apparent calamity has been a boon to us, for it opened up a path which led to the discovery of God. And, you know, I used to hear people say, oh, I'm so grateful to be a compulsive overeater because it made me do this or that. And I thought, that's crazy. Why would I be grateful to be a compulsive overeater? But because I'm in this program and because I'm a compulsive overeater, I had to seek God. And I wasn't looking for God. I was not looking for God. When I first came into program, I heard the word God. I was like, I'm out of here. And I left for a while to be more miserable. But okay. So anyway, I'm very grateful. Thanks, Kathleen. Just really grateful to be reminded of all these things. And I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Eileen. Thank you. And Deborah D., you're next, followed by Mary Jane Z.
Hi, everyone. I'm Deborah. I'm a compulsive overeater. And thank you so much for your service. And thank you all for your shares. I love meetings because I get continually reminded, and I love the book about staying in the spiritual solution. That's what I heard in the reading too, the spiritual solution. And what does that look like for me? You know, it's writing down my food at night before I go to sleep and calling my sponsor the next day with my food. That's spiritual. Weighing and measuring my food, that's spiritual. And feeding my body healthy, nutritious foods, that's spiritual. We're going through the steps. Living the steps, taking other people through the steps, that's spiritual. And I love what was shared about continuing to work on my relationship with God and clearing away anything that comes up in that path where I get separated. I want to stay connected rather than separated, and maybe I'm angry about something, I can clean that up. Calling somebody, doing the writing, doing a step, praying for that person. You know, I have so many wonderful tools. I have so many wonderful women. I have men, too, in this program, but the women, boy, my soul sisters, that I can talk to And when I'm doing all this action work, I'm not concerned about anybody else and what they're doing. You know, my sponsor reminds me that everyone is doing the best they can, time and place. And if I can remember that, you know, I'm in a better place. And then also I remember a guy in Illinois, he always says, stay in your own hula hoop. You know, I want to stay in my own hula hoop. And then when I'm doing all those things, I'm more loving and more kind, more caring, more tolerant, more patient, all those things that God does for me, that God changes me, that God has me be how he wants me to be, however he wants me to be that day, and be of service to God and my fellows. And I'm so grateful for this program. Because of not being in the food, I have more clarity and more willingness to do this. You know, and I'm not perfect. I do fall back into things, you know, and but I have this program. I have these tools to help me, and I'm so blessed and so grateful. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah D. And Mary Jane Z, followed by Jordan L.
Hello, this is Mary Jane Z. How's my sound level?
Perfect.
Okay, great. All righty. Well, this is Mary Jane Z, recovered in Kentucky. And I love that the our reading starts with, but sometimes you must start life anew. And it ends with, for it opened up a path which led to the discovery of God. And this reading reminds me, it's like an invitation, and it kind of echoes back to the foreword to the first edition on XIII, where it says, many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person, and besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. And I'm, you know, I am the wife, and I am the addict. And I thought I was just the wife, so I went to that program and discovered, whoops, I'm an addict too. So it's kind of funny to flip-flop back and forth in the disease, and really my solution was the food. And, you know, just come to see how my behavior affected everybody. And, you know, I was not the type kept everything. I grew up in a home where everybody knew our business, and I took that little slogan, you're only as sick as your secrets, and everybody knew my business in my neighborhood. And after working these steps, that's come to haunt me to some degree, and I've gotten a lot of opportunities to make living amends on that. And the freedom that I have now is that I can act differently. I can see I'm unhooked from the patterns of behavior. And when I fall back to them, I have the steps that can get me right-sized again. And this path has opened up the discovery of God in my life, which God was always there, and the power of God is always deep. I just forgot, and just very grateful to be on this path with all of you. Thanks, and I pass.
Thank you, Mary Jane C. And Jordan L., followed by Debbie B.
Good morning. Can you hear me, Kathleen?
Yes.
Cool. My name is Jordan L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado. I'm grateful to be on the line this morning. And I do not really relate to the wives. But as I was kind of like reading through this, there were some words that I picked up in here that I can relate to for sure, right? Starting with that second paragraph, is worry and avoid and trembling recluse and embarrassment and self-conscious and tension and lie and resentful and paralyzing fear and disgrace and hard times. Like if I kind of remove the circumstances of what it's talking about, I can relate to all of those things. Like that's exactly where I was at when I was in this disease, you know? Like it's been said over and over and over again. This isn't like, it is like cancer in that it's a disease. But, you know, like when my mom had cancer, I was like, what can I do to help? What can I do to help? What can I do to help, you know? I'll take you to a doctor's appointment, whatever. And that's not the reaction that people had to me being a compulsive overeater. Like the reaction that people have to me being a trembling recluse is like, okay, we'll leave you alone, you know, like we'll back off. We'll leave you completely and totally isolated, you know. And I withdraw more, and they withdraw more, and I withdraw more, and they withdraw more. So no wonder we can get so sick, you know, so far into this. But then, like, that last paragraph, I was trying to kind of put myself in that position, right, the position of someone who is, like, depending on their husband to make a living for their household, and he loses his job, and like sitting there despairing, like, what am I going to do? And then someone says, maybe it will prove to be a blessing. I'd be like, F you, man. other than you get to the end of that paragraph and it talks about a path which led to the discovery of God. That's it right there, right? That is how I found my higher power. Is I was in all of these things. I was in all of these terrible, awful places, mentally, self-conscious. I'll wrap it up. Self-conscious, tension, paralyzing fear. Like it was a dark place that I found God. You know what I mean? So it's possible. That's right where I needed to be. I needed the care and protection. So anyway, thank you so much, guys. That's it. I pass.
Thank you, Jordan. And Debbie B., you're up.
Good morning, everyone. This is Debbie B., recovered compulsive overeater just outside of Salt Lake City. And the thing that stood out to me in this paragraph today was something that surprised me. It was the last paragraph, there is another paralyzing fear. And for several years, I have a very close family member who I care about deeply that has an addiction. And I didn't want anybody to ever find out. I was terrified that anyone would ever find out. And obviously, I've learned in program other ways to look at this, but I was in a big group of people a few days ago, and a very large group of people, and this person that I care so much about with this addiction, his wife decided to share with everyone about her husband's addiction. And I remember during the time that she was talking, just feeling, just like this paragraph says, paralyzed. And I thought, oh, no, everyone's going to know. This is going to ruin everything. But as soon as she was done speaking, I just felt this feeling of peace. And I know that comes from the program. I know it does. And the weird thing is people came up to me afterwards and they said, I bet you're just furious. Are you not just absolutely furious? And I thought, no. And this is the reason why. I have learned through my addiction that the more secretive we are and the more we hide and the more we do those actions that make us not want anyone to know, which means hiding out, telling lies, it just grows stronger. And this family member, it was not my secret to share. It was his. That was not something for me to share about him. But I decided maybe, or I felt that maybe this will be a turning point for him. It's out. And I also kind of felt a feeling of relief that I don't have to have that fear anymore. That paralyzing fear is gone because it's out. And the same thing with my own addiction. I had a fear that anyone would ever know that I was binge eating. Of course, I didn't have an addiction because, you know, I didn't know I had it. But I feared anyone would know. And now that I'm in program, I want people to ask me. I'm not one that goes around telling everyone, hey, you need this, this will help you. But I want them to ask me, and I will pray, bless this person that she will ask me so then I can share with her. And I can tell her the strength and hope that comes from this program that one by one removes our paralyzing fears. And we don't have to hide anymore. I'm so grateful for this program. I can't even express how much my life has changed through it. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Debbie B. And thank you, everyone who shared this morning. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Marilyn T. please read A Vision for You?
Thank you. Here we go. A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to us, to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.